Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello and welcome back as we close out another week here at The Damage Report. Suffering from a little bit of tech problems that for a new viewer of the show, they would think, what tech problems? You're coming in perfectly on time. But that's the mystery.
Stay tuned,
you'll start to figure it out.
The system was down. The system was down.
We're having technical problems. We're also having personality problems, some more than others. For instance, hey, Brett, how's it going?
I'll tell you what, John, I wish we had a little time before to discuss what was going on, because I can say with great confidence that I am not confident in my ability to perform at the level you've come to expect today.
Why is that? I might feel the same way.
We've got these foster puppies. I don't know if people are aware of this, but as a result, I have to take them to pee in a place that's not inside my home. And we live in a place where to get back, there's like there's a pretty steep grade. So I have walked up and then the wifey, put your face on.
God.
The wife, she said yesterday, she's like, in the last 2 days, I have walked up this hill more than I have in the 5 years we've lived here.
Why are you taking them to pee down the massive slope?
I just can't like take them outside and be like, pee and come back inside the apartment. Because if they come back in the apartment, John, I can't do the zoomies. They can't corner like they think they can. So there's been a lot of like, oh, this is hardwood, no brakes, careen into a wall.
Okay.
There's two of them. They're two sausages that were hit by lightning in a lab, and one grew a cute face and the other grew a brain, is where I'm at with them.
The boy is a locomotive,
a spectral locomotive, and the girl just looks at him and goes, cool. This is how fetch works, you idiot.
Oh my God. Gonna be a hell of a mom someday. Okay, so no, I'm kidding. Okay, so there have been references now to two puppies. More references than you would normally expect at the beginning of an hour-long politics show. Let's keep it real. But you might be thinking, well, okay, but you're talking about puppies, but I can't see the puppies. But what if you could? So today on the stream, for the first time ever, we're gonna do a little bit of a like challenge. But it's going to come in two tiers. So if we hit 2,000 likes on the YouTube stream, you're going to see a dog. Which of the two? I don't know. Brett's going to pick. But if you want to see both dogs, we got to hit 3,000. Come on. We can do it for two pups. When was the last time we got to see two pups? I think we can do it.
There has been a lot's going on. There's a lot of activity in the Twitch chat about this. Obi-Mom Kenobi has cheered bits for pups.
Nice.
And also, early, just before the show started, gifted 20 tier 1 subs, which is awesome.
Oh, that's a lot. That's a ton. Thank you, as always. Well, here's what we're going to do. So I can see that we're getting up there. We're at like almost half of a puppy, which if we can only show you half of a puppy, he's going to have to back one into the frame and then stop. But anyway, I think we can get there. There's a couple thousand of you here already. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. You can share the stream and all of that. Let people know what's going on. You might be on a different platform. You might have to do some other thing. I don't know how algorithms work, but you guys are experts, so you figure it out. But anyway, with that, we do have a lot that we're going to be getting to over the course of this episode. We're going to be talking about teaching America's youth to love our nation and how important that is. We've got some updates on the post office, former Pensades burning down the countryside in their own way, as well as our garbage people of the week. Brett's, mine, and also yours. So stay tuned for the end of the episode, and we'll get to that. Brett, you looked a little bit antsy. Is there anything else we need to get to before we jump into the stories?
Moxie, from a friend of the show, Moxie, is on Happy Half Hour this week after main show, and we go through a lot of great stuff. We got Karen's Unmasked. We've got a game called What the F is Going On. A lot of genitals on the show, actually. Unexpected when I started producing it, but by the end, there were a lot of genitals. Don't worry, you won't be traumatized. We don't show you all the genitals. We have actual genitals covered with emojis. We learn a lot about Alex, our producer, and how she chooses to blur certain things in and the perviest sculpture I have ever seen.
What?
Is in a museum that bears the name of a TYT host. I am not kidding. It is creepy. What? It is pervy. Please tune into Happy Half Hour with Moxie, so that streamer, so that you can see what host's name is on a museum that bears the weirdest, perviest statue in the universe.
I'm not going to say it because I don't want to ruin it, but I'm fairly certain I know who it has to be. Playing the numbers game. Anyway, you know what other numbers we need to concern ourselves
last
with?
Name,
the number
way.
Of minutes. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to jump into the stories. We're going to be responding to your comments and tweets and super chats and all of that as we go. But with that, why don't we give you something to chat about? For instance, our education system. So that's where we're going to start off. Yesterday, Donald Trump gave a speech about the First Amendment and education and what kids are being taught and how he thinks it needs to be unbiased. And then he proceeded to talk about how incredibly biased towards some sort of farcical right-wing idea of what America's past has been like, as you will see in this short bit of announcement audio.
We must clear away the twisted web of lies in our schools and classrooms and teach our children the magnificent truth about our country. We want our sons and daughters to know that they are the citizens of the most exceptional nation in the history of the world.
Okay, we could show you tons of that, but it's Friday, you know, I don't want to depress you. So I will summarize it with this quote from that appearance from Donald Trump yesterday. Our youth will be taught to love America. Or as Fox News spun it, Trump wants to stop indoctrination in schools, according to Tucker Carlson's lower third. He wants to stop indoctrination in schools while teaching America's youth to love America. Look, there's more to this. Nobody's surprised, I get it. That this is their approach to education. That education is not about learning, you know, fractions or any job skills or anything like that. It's you being taught to, you know, pay homage to our country, and that's it. But this does seem perfectly tailor-made for the right, based on their view of education, their view of what's actually going wrong in this country. It's a good idea from Trump's point of view, if he wants to pursue his strategy of just inspiring his base to love him more and not expanding that literally at all.
You know, I get that there's going to be a lot of time during the school day if Trump gets his way to focus on propaganda, because he's definitely, there's no science in the Trump administration. He's come out quite against that. What do they think happens in schools? Like, what do you think is taught in schools to children? Hopefully just what happened. And I know there, but already, even given like the 1619 project, which isn't in really any schools, the Trump administration is getting its way. Like, they teach you that America's awesome. That's what they do. And there's the 4th of July. And I think I don't think we need to, like, I think this is so overtly, blatantly political that every time I try to just like moderately engage it from a practical level or a reasonable level, I realize how futile that is. I think we should teach our kids the things they need to get jobs, the things they need to survive. And I don't think that sure, we can teach them about the cool things Americans did. I think we should. I think we should teach them about all the awesome stuff that came from America. We should also teach them like the reality of America. And in the time before the 1619 project came out, we still taught people that slavery happened. and we taught that it was bad. It seems like from Trump's perspective, I just don't understand. Like, if he wants to change how we teach kids, does he want us to teach them that slavery was good? That seems to be his only argument, because he's upset that we're just trying to teach folks that, like, yes, the beginning of America did have slavery, whips, chains, rape. And he's like, I don't want it to, and that was bad. And he says, I want the opposite of that. So it seems like he just wants to teach people that slavery was good. That's psychotic.
I don't think he really has any personal investment in any of what we see in this or what will come of it. I think this is a Stephen Miller sort of, you know, it's the political side of the Trump administration. And they think Fox is going to love this. And they did. We're not going to show you the Fox and Friends videos, but, you know, Kilmeade loved it and was talking about it this morning. This is made for right-wing activists. You know, the free speechers who will love this because that fits into their idea of what protecting the First Amendment is all about. Of course, it's indoctrination. It's intended to be indoctrination. They're not opposed to indoctrination. They want it. They want it to be a very narrow idea of what, you know, American history has been, what American education should be. But to give you a little bit more information, Mr. Trump said he would soon sign an executive order to create the 1776 Commission. That one's subtle. Named after the year the American colonies declared their independence. He said the commission would promote a patriotic education. It's always been great when countries teach patriotic education. And quote, encourage our educators to teach our children about the miracle of American history. Which is just like, it's so, you can just imagine, like, school kids in North Korea, like, marching in line as they learn about the miracle of history.
I think that's sacrilegious. I think that's sacrilegious. The only miracles are done by Jesus and God. And I don't think Jesus, who is the Lord under his eye, amen. I think this is an attack. Trump's 1776 commission is an attack on the church. It is an attack on Protestantism, because it is trying to supplant Jesus and God with Trump and some weird worship of America, which I think it's going to really offend evangelical.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, they won't possibly be able to figure out a way to combine those two things. Important context for this: the federal government does not have jurisdiction over school curriculum. Just bear that in mind. Now, will any, you know, red state governors do what they can to, you know, prove to Trump how loyal they are in this area? Probably. But they don't have any direct control over that. That's just not actually how it works. And on the 1619 project, in comparison to his new commission, Mr. Trump said it, in fact, quote, rewrites American history to teach our children that we were founded on the principle of oppression, not freedom. Here's the issue with that. You know, millions of Americans were slaves, and they were written to be slaves into that. Like, we, you know, how many people could vote when we created that? It was obviously founded on oppression. There were some good things too in comparison to other countries, but oppression was built into that system. That is just the case. And it only took a couple hundred years and counting for us to finally get rid of all that. I'll update you when we've finally gotten rid of the last of it. But it's just, it's obviously, it's ahistorical nonsense. That's all it is.
You can still frame America as being founded on freedom. I'll give you that. All we want to do is keep America to its promise. That's it. And, like, Trump is all about pointing out every failure in the world. That's all he does. It's like, that's bad. That's a failure. It's so terrible. Oh my God, the press is so wrong. The news is so fake. Why won't he just point out, like, the failures of America? It's okay. It's better now than it was. And what's wrong with teaching people, like, America put out a promise. America put on the promise of freedom. At the time, there was hypocrisy. And you can go through and point out, like, who of the founding fathers had realized the hypocrisy? Who of the founding fathers did not realize the hypocrisy? Why can't we get to a point where we're just honest about it? That's the problem. And the answer is, he doesn't want to be honest. He never does. There hasn't been a president who's lied more. I mean, what he's trying to do is he wants to do patriotic stuff. I mean, it is just very obvious that this has only ever been a ploy. I mean, what about the 1776 commission? Can people eat? Or, you know, nothing. This is all frou-frou to take away from the real conversation that America needs to have, which is, 200,000 Americans are dead from coronavirus because he messed it up.
Yeah.
He's going into an election and he's trying to he's trying to feed us nonsense. And he needs to feed us like economic plans. But he doesn't have the capability to do that. And he's been a failure since he took office and he needs to be out of office.
The fact that this is one of their priorities shows how fundamentally unserious they are about governing America, but it's also like the 1,000th reminder we have of that. They can't acknowledge the actual problems. They don't really see the actual economic problems, the problems in our healthcare system, all of that as actual problems. And Fox News, right-wing media is designed to take those people that believe on some level that they're driven by economic anxiety or whatever, and believe that the solution to all of our problems comes from, you know, allowing more right wing speakers to be paid $50,000 to speak at a college once or something, and to do stuff like this. The bigger problem that this really fits into is you have a person like Donald Trump or whoever as a figurehead for this saying, America's been great. It's always been great. It's always been liberty and freedom and all of that. We just need to think about how amazing it is. And then turn to this 6 month long civil rights movement that has been, it's a historic level protest movement, and saying, you're wrong to criticize. You want the cops to stop killing you? No, it's not necessary. There's a huge gap between that. And that is nothing new. That is nothing new. There's fundamentally, for a very long time, has been clear, there are people in America who want America to be as great as we always say, and there are people who want to shout that it's great. That's the two. And I want to read a quick quote. This is from way back, from it was one, like the first chapter of an Al Franken book, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. And I remember this to this day because he described it this way. We love America just as much as they do, but in a different way. You see, they love America like a 4-year-old loves his mommy. Liberals love America like grown-ups. To a 4-year-old, everything mommy does is wonderful and anyone who criticizes mommy is bad. Grown-up love means actually understanding what you love, taking the good with the bad and helping your loved one grow. You could expand that, you know, to dissertation length. But the idea is that we want America to be worthy of the praise that the right uncritically gives it. And I understand they've benefited far more from the messed up systems that America has economically, politically, socially, all of that, then a lot of the people doing the reforming. But these are like that you don't get anywhere from just holding your hand over your heart and reciting the Pledge of Allegiance for the rest of your life. You don't actually improve a country that way. Now, this is just symbolic. It's not gonna actually do anything. But even if it could do something, it wouldn't accomplish anything. That's my issue with it. For the past few months, concerns have been raised by politicians, activists, and whistleblowers as well that Louis DeJoy and his changes to the post office have not only made it more difficult for mail to be delivered in a timely fashion, as the post office is supposed to do, but is also setting the stage potentially for massive problems with the surge in mail and voting that's likely to come in the general election later on this year. Well, at least as of right now, many of those changes will be put on hold and some reversed, thanks to a court decision that just came down in the last day, with Stanley Bastian, chief judge of the US District Court for the Eastern District of Washington, saying that policies put in place, quote, likely will slow down delivery of ballots this fall, creating a, quote, substantial possibility that many voters will be disenfranchised and the states may not be able to effectively, timely, accurately determine election outcomes. So by the way, just in terms of how they put that, Trump should love this because he's been so worried about a timely resolution of the election. So what does Stanley Bastian actually think should be done? Well, a little bit more from that decision says that the states have demonstrated that the defendants, this is 13 different states, by the way, are involved in a politically motivated attack on the efficiency of the Postal Service. They've also demonstrated that this attack on the Postal Service is likely to irreparably harm the state's ability to administer the 2020 general election. Goes on to finally say, it is easy to conclude that the recent Postal Service's changes is an intentional effort on the part of the current administration to disrupt and challenge the legitimacy of upcoming local, state, and federal elections. So we're gonna talk about what's gonna change as a result of this in just a bit. But Brett, it's not just, you know, we acknowledge that this has had an effect, but I don't often see judges willing to so specifically say, here is why it was done. Here is what I believe the intent was behind these changes.
I mean, that was implied in the at least temporary block on Trump's Muslim ban. And it's very obvious that that's what's happened. And there's a lot of judges at a lot of different levels of our federal court system. And And yes, you were going to find, I mean, this is the right judge who actually has no problems coming forward and saying this because it's true. Once you're in there as a judge, it depends on what kind of judge, you're either there for life or you have to be elected. But yeah, I think this is the right choice. And I think this is something that somebody had to say, and now it's in the record. And it's something that we were all thinking. Now, is this going to last? Who knows? But I think having it, and will it be appealed? Absolutely. Where does it get appealed to? These things go, or some version of it, or some other counter challenge or parallel challenge might make its way to the Supreme Court. Yeah. And it is necessary. And what is it incumbent upon us to do? Get someone there who will keep these kinds of things in check. This is an assault on the Constitution, what the president has done. This is an assault on the fundamental premise of democracy. And it's not the only thing. Like, it's not like if we block the interference by the president in mail-in voting, that this is the only thing we need to do and suddenly democracy will be restored and the confetti will fall and bells will ring out. We did it, we did it. No, this is one of a million things that people need to do to protect their democracy, both from Democrats and Republicans. That's why we need to have an accurate census. That's why we need to have state legislatures that actually reflect, that are not gerrymandered. Then we need independent commissions to draw the district lines, regardless of who, regardless of who's in power at the time. And how do we know that this thing needs to be done? Because look at all the state legislatures in every state throughout the country. Whoever had the power to draw the district last, and then the congressional districts for the US Congress, whoever had the power to draw the districts last drew them insanely to benefit them. And you go state by state, we've done it on this show and on every show on the network in the past, gone through states and saying what percentage of people voted for which party. Okay, that's one number. What percentage of the state and US federal congressional seats belong to which party? Those are two different numbers, and they're not close. They're seldom ever close. And we need to fix that. This is one of the things that we need to do to protect our democracy because it is always already under siege.
Yeah, and I would say it's not like the two paths we can go down is, we either, have a massively manipulated election, or all of a sudden things are great. This is like, we should be fighting back against things like this to just get back to the many different layers of slightly more subtle voter suppression that were already in place, in a million different ways. Some of it literally structurally how representation is allocated, to the gerrymandering, to a million different things. It's become so blatant, so over the top that you replace the head of the post office with a guy who comes in and immediately grinds to a halt the ability of the post office to deliver mail. That should be too obvious, I think. Like when they go in and they go to a state and they decide, oh no, we're gonna take away 500 polling places, and where are we gonna do it? I don't know, where do black people live? We're just gonna go and we're gonna take all of those out. Like, there should be a level that is too unsubtle even for America and its lack of, real respect for substantive democracy going back to its founding.
Yeah.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Now, in terms of what effect this might have, at least until the Supreme Court overrules it, the judge ordered the Postal Service to reverse any instructions for mail carriers to leave mail behind at postal facilities, to stop requiring trucks to leave at set times regardless of whether the mail is ready, and to allow return trips to distribution centers to ensure timely delivery. Now, these are some of the changes that long-serving postal employees have gone on the record in any number of awesome reports on this by a lot of different outlets saying it makes absolutely no sense that these restrictions have put in. I know what needs to be done to deliver the mail. These are completely artificial obstacles that are being set up. And additionally, and this is potentially even more directly linked to the ability to handle the surge in mail and ballots, the USPS must also treat all election mail according to first class delivery standards and replace or restore the equipment required to do that. Any request to reconnect or replace any decommissioned or removed sorting machine must be directed through the court for approval unless the USPS has already approved it. So you don't get to treat ballots and things like that like junk mail, which is, again, we should be able to have some sort of bar. Make it a little bit more subtle when you're trying to stop the American people from being able to weigh in.
That's
in an election.
Great, I mean, a lot of junk mail is very likely first class mail anyway. But like, that's, I mean, I like,
no, is it?
I think we should, I don't know, but I think we should say that. Trump is treating, I mean, I think that should be on t-shirts and posters, is Trump is turning your ballots into junk mail. We want to treat it right, because obviously we do. But he wants junk mail, and he wants to treat it like junk mail. And there were standards before, like all the extent to which I get frustrated with like how a politician feels they need to sound when giving a speech. Mm-hmm. Basically, all that is Mike Pence, which is like, I'm gonna do this, and the Ted Cruz and all that. At least there were certain things that they wouldn't do because they understood what it would mean for democracy. And the easiest way to typify this is Jeff Sessions was the biggest bootlicker, corrupt, racist shill. But even he, when it came to like the Russia investigation, was like, this would be too corrupt. And Trump has no problem with that. And truly, like, there's some certain criticisms Trump gets for assigning people to be in charge of certain commissions that I think are illogical. In my opinion, it's fine to put someone in charge of a commission who typically is not like a career bureaucrat, or has criticized that. Like, put someone in charge of a body that puts out regulations who has been against regulations. I don't think that that's enough to criticize the appointment, but so often it's people who have a vested financial interest in pulling back these regulations, and not a financial interest that relates to a bunch of other people who run businesses. Like, I would put a business person in charge of certain business regulating bodies, because a lot of them, especially when it comes to small businesses, there's a lot of the regulations that affect businesses. The big businesses have a way to get around it, and the small businesses get completely like torn apart by them because they're held to the same standard. I think you can put a small business person in charge of a business regulating body because there needs to be representation from them. But in terms of what Trump has done, putting Louis DeJoy, who has a financial interest in having the responsibilities of the post office farmed out to a company that he runs and owns. Mm-hmm. That is where we need to draw the line, because it's not just that, it's also Trump's reliance on DeJoy's personal financial interests to help Trump essentially undo the fabric of democracy. And that's not allowed.
Yeah, I mean, it's multiple levels of financial conflicts of interest, both in terms of where he has worked in the past, where he will immediately go back to working when he's out of the Trump administration, but also his past donations seemingly buying this spot. I disagree to some extent. I think, look, if you want to say that simply being opposed to the core mission statement of an agency, I would say maybe that shouldn't cause you to be sort of unqualified for it, although I'm not even sure I get to that. But to say that it's not enough to be criticized, like, you know, if you're putting like a guy who represented like the fossil fuel trade union or something like that as the head of the EPA, I think that definitely merits criticism at the very least. And DeJoy, thanks to his actions, and, you know, God help him if we ever get access to the communications that almost surely plotted this out, this seems like maybe it's not breaking laws, but it certainly seems like it should be breaking laws to do this, to so manipulate, you know, an agency like the Postal Service. Recently, more and more former Trump administration officials have been coming out and being incredibly critical of the Trump administration, but we now have the first that's doing so sort of specifically having worked on the coronavirus response. This is Olivia Troy, who worked as Homeland Security, Counterterrorism, and Coronavirus Advisor to Vice President Pence for 2 years. It's a wide portfolio there. Came out and said that the administration's response cost lives and that she will vote for Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden this fall because of her experience in the Trump White House. I mean, she was in the administration very recently, up until very recently. And we're gonna have more on how she was involved in that effort, more of her criticism, but I want to go to a little bit of the video of her talking about that time.
I was Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Advisor to Vice President Pence and served as Vice President Pence's lead staff member on the COVID-19 response. You know, I've been on the COVID task force from day one. I mean, the virus was very unpredictable at the beginning. There were a lot of unknowns, but towards the middle of February, we knew it wasn't a matter of if COVID would become a big pandemic here in the United States. It was a matter of when. In a task force meeting, the president said, maybe this COVID thing is a good thing. I don't like shaking hands with people. I don't have to shake hands with these disgusting people. Those disgusting people are the same people that he claims to care about. These are the people still going to his rallies today who have complete faith in who he is. If the president had taken this virus seriously, or if he had actually made an effort to tell how serious it was, he would have slowed the virus spread. He would have saved lives. It was the opportunity and honor of a lifetime to be able to serve in the White House. I put my heart and soul into this role every single day. But at some point, I would come home at night, I would look myself in the mirror and say, are you really making a difference? Does it matter? Because no matter how hard you work and what you do, the president is gonna do something that is detrimental to keeping an American safe, which is why you signed up for this role. It was awful. It was terrifying. I have been a Republican for my entire life. I am a McCain Republican, I am a Bush Republican, and I am voting for Joe Biden because I truly believe we are at a time of constitutional crisis.
Okay, so there's a lot more of that that's available, but understand that she was not, as we'll get to when Trump responds, some minor functionary that didn't have much to do with this. She apparently attended and helped organize every single meeting of the task force from February until July, working closely with Pence, establishing the agenda, all of that. Like, she was very, very tapped into it. And she is hardly the first person that, you know, worked with Trump that has come out and said, you know, I just at some point I have to be broken by how awful this person is and how little they seem to care. It is depressing that that's not gonna get through. Like the quote about not wanting to shake people's hands, like if you go to Trump rally, he doesn't shake your hands, you know that. He just talked at one of the last ones about how he was far away from them, so he wasn't worried about catching the virus. Like, these are all insiders. This is not some never Trumper. Like, she worked for 2 years in that administration, but it doesn't matter. This endless parade of people who worked with Trump who are saying, no, he's terrible. And it doesn't matter, she's still a Republican. She's probably a deeply conservative individual, but it won't break through. It doesn't matter how many, you know, front row seat people you have talking about their time, about this important work and the cost. It's depressing that it probably won't matter.
And we know, you know, that Trump thinks his supporters are gross. Like, you know it. And when he says, like, our stuff. Remember that was there's that one quote where he says, like, our boats are bigger. We're the elite. Our boats are bigger than them. What are you talking about? The big boats in the Republican Trump boat parade sank the little boats in the Republican Trump boat parade. That is everything you need to know about it in a nutshell. And also, like, she's listing the Republicans she's voted for. She was fine with George W. Bush, and this crosses a line. And you can't have someone who is more rah-rah Americana than George W. Bush.
Like he is willing to go and invade random ass countries that had no, you know, and lie. Like that's pretty America.
Look, we have to be fair. We have to allow the president to respond. So he said to reporters that she was some kind of a lower level person. Like if Pence was criticizing him, he'd say he was a lower level person. Like everyone's a low level. There's only the White House is Trump, and then there's very low level people. He said he doesn't remember meeting her or talking to her. That might have something to do with the fact that apparently he, well, we'll get to his participation in the task force meetings, but he very rarely went. So it is possible that he wouldn't have seen her, even though she was at all of them. He said she was terminated. They didn't want her. It reads to me like one more disgruntled employee that has decided to play politics during an election year. And I will just say, if you're a Trump supporter, like why is it that there's so many disgruntled employees coming out of this administration? Like hypothetically, people leave every administration. Why is it that there are so many that the second they're no longer working for Donald Trump, they're talking about how horrendous and, you know, all the dysfunction and all of that. Why? Trump is such a great boss. He really understands people. He's a great guy. Why is it that the loyalty he inspires while people are working for him, the second they're gone, they feel like they have to reveal the horrendous things they were exposed to?
Well, not all of them, sadly.
Not all of them, yes, but like a lot.
And a lot of them out. In the pictures.
This didn't happen with Obama.
Correct. Correct, but here's the framing. So what do you think about this? I'm gonna play the devil's advocate. When it comes, so the one thing I don't even know if he's smart enough to fall back on, but I think it's kind of in that I am a Trump supporter. I only need like half of a thought to latch on to so I can excuse myself and just say no. This is what's messed up, man. This is the real truth behind it. The post-truth truth is. Anytime someone from the administration leaves the administration, Trump got him out of he's draining the swamp. This is a person who's a lifelong bureaucrat, and Trump gets rid of those people. So what do you think? Do you think this will get through to them in the way I think that the Miles Taylor did kind of get through when he said, no, I am the chief of staff of who put together a lot of these meetings and I was there.
I will just say how crazy this is and how many there have been. I sort of alluded to a parade. I had completely forgotten about that one. That was like a couple of weeks ago. I completely forgot about all that he revealed.
And these things should be over and over and over again, played on the air everywhere. She should go and be at events and speak out about it. And it's tough because I think it plays, the defense that the Trump administration has is like, you've got these people who've been in politics for hundreds of years. People who are just bureaucrats who are mad that Trump won't let them do their bureaucrat stuff. That's the counter argument. And I think that's something that I think can only really be overcome. And I hope the reason that we haven't heard yet from a lot of the people super close to the Trump administration that we really want to hear from, the Mattises, et cetera, is because I hope they're waiting for October.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. After a long time, Pence aide who had worked on the coronavirus response as well as national security came out and was incredibly critical about the things Trump had said about not having to shake his disgusting followers' hands. He said that she was just a low-level person. Okay, well, to be fair, he doesn't really know what was going on in that task force. Let's talk to someone who did. And here you'll have Chris Hayes interviewing Dr. Fauci about what has come out over the last day.
There are people in a lot of anxiety right now, trying to homeschool their kids, worried about elderly and immunocompromised folks they know. What can you do to reassure people who hear this and think that the person leading the response, President of the United States, doesn't care?
Chris, you're right. I really can't comment on that. I mean, I interacted with Olivia. I liked that she was a good person. She was important to the team as a staff person to the coronavirus task force. But, I don't know what to make about what just has come out recently. It would be very difficult for me to comment on that. The only thing I can say is that there are a lot of people who are looking carefully and are driven by the truth. And I think the American people should feel confidence in that, that a lot of people are looking at this very, very carefully to make sure that there's not political things that drive what should be scientific considerations. I'm one of them, and I have a number of colleagues that are with me.
Okay, so his point there at the end that there's good people who are making sure that politics isn't what drives this. Let's return to that in just a minute. My frustration with Fauci there, and it's one of the reasons that like I like Fauci more than anyone else who served in the Trump administration that I know of, but I'm not getting the tattoo like some people, is that I want to ask Fauci, did he say the thing about the hands? Why, like you could reveal so much more. And I understand that at some point it might lead to you getting thrown off. But if you, like you could confirm more of the things that he said about herd immunity. You've been in all those meetings. She said that he almost never went to any of these, not Fauci, that Trump almost never went to any of these. And one time he talked for 45 minutes straight about how Fox personalities weren't being fair to him on the pandemic. Fauci could reveal so much information about that. But he doesn't. He's doing his job. He's the best that we've got. But I'm just saying we should also acknowledge the limitations there.
That's the issue with being a grown-up. Like that's the problem with being a grown-up is you have a lot of responsibilities. That's what Trump is failing at in every possible way. There are still some there. He relies on grown-ups, but there are fewer and fewer grown-ups around him. Like Trump just is like candy, terrible thing. Make fun of someone, be a bully and a jerk, right? That's what Trump is doing. But Fauci is looking around saying, I actually do want to save human beings' lives. And it is, and he is not an idiot. So he knows exactly what the boundary is and what he can get away with, all the way up to saying something like that, which would probably get him fired. But he knows he needs to be somewhere close to the president to save him, to save us from him. And this is essentially him saying, listen, she's right. It's accurate what she's saying. Everyone knows it. I'm going to go back and do my job now. But on the one hand, it's tough to be Fauci, who is trying to thread the needle of what he can say so that it can get through to folks when we've all been desensitized by Trump, who is just yelling, they're coming for you. They're teaching you that America's evil. And we need to point out that on this situation, like this is the demon semen guy. This is the inject you with Trump is the guy who told you to inject yourself with disinfectant and UV light. Like, and we need the voice of a woman who says the demons impregnate you in the night.
Yeah, that's 100% true. And you know, I've been sort of waiting to launch our COVID flashback segment. We're gonna go back to some of those iconic highlights and lowlights of the pandemic. That'll definitely be one of them. And I get it. There's things he can't say because he'll be fired. But I just have to, like, now that like I can look back over months and I wonder, like I wish I could know objectively somehow if there was a perfect supercomputer that could tell me what effect has Fauci actually had. What would have happened had he not been there? Like what will happen were he to leave now? It just came out that CDC testing guidance was published against scientists' objections, with officials telling the Times this week that the Department of Health and Human Services did the rewriting of what should merit a test and then dropped it in the CDC's public website, flouting the agency's strict scientific review process. Now we knew as soon as that change was done that this is definitely why it was done. It was the natural culmination of we need to slow down the testing. You do a test, you get a case. We knew that. And it is indeed true. So that happened despite the fact that, you know, you've got Fauci and he says that Burks is good. Or this week when it came out that the White House reportedly scrapped a plan to mail face masks to every household in the US because they thought it would create a concern or a panic. Maybe it would have. It would have also hypothetically produced a little bit more compliance with the masks to show support at the very beginning from the White House telling right wingers that this is a good thing that you should do. And it also would have let them have masks. So from the, and there's all the stuff with Jared early on, like I'm glad that he's there. I'm glad that he has this mission to make sure that science is on sort of an equal footing. But as I look back over the pandemic, it doesn't seem like that has often been the case.
Also, I mean, as you'll see on the Young Turks later today, Jared Kushner, that last story that you spoke about is a bombshell, because Jared Kushner very recently has said the reason that New York didn't get masks and PPEs is because they weren't asking us enough. Why didn't he break down our door and ask us? No. It was all ready to go out. And it was the White House who stopped it. Why? Because they didn't want to create a panic. But yeah. But would there be what's panicking about getting masks in the mail? All the other crap I get in the mail, they don't want to panic people. Trump is sending out, and the Republicans are sending out flyers saying that the Democrats are coming for your family. In South Carolina, in Georgia, they're saying, look at this Jew with the big nose. And they're saying, listen, every time the Democrats get someone, they're going to kill a bunch of babies. That stuff goes out in the mail. Getting masks in the mail. Oh my God, I didn't want to start a panic. You know what's going to create a panic? What should create a panic? 200,000 people dead. And he hasn't done anything except, and this is the through line with a lot of people from Joe Rogan all the way down to Donald Trump and Charlie Kirk and Tucker Carlson. If they spent an eighth of the effort that they currently spend on trying to find excuses and cover-ups for their stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
If they spent an eighth of that effort on actually fixing problems or doing a little research, they'd solve it. There would be nothing else to talk about. You would have a wild success story on your hands, but they don't. They would rather sit there and try to find a way to message their way out of this. And
it would have been so simple. I know that we talk about this a lot, but if they had just 50% taken it seriously compared to some randomly chosen Western European country, we would have 80,000 dead or whatever, and he'd be cruising to victory. Like it would, what a stupid authoritarian movement America is going to inevitably fall to.
And meanwhile, we'll talk about this in a garbage people segment, but like, four people died in Benghazi, and that was a tragedy. This is what, 100,000 times worse?
Yeah.
You know, like 50,000 times worse?
Yeah. Crazy. And every day it's, you know, 300 times worse. And also I'm sure that you'll talk about on the main show, but the people who met with Jared Kushner early on that said it was fairly clear that he didn't care about New York because it was a blue state, even though he like his businesses are there. But it's been so obvious. I mean, Donald Trump couldn't be more obvious that he literally wants to deduct the blue state numbers from the numbers. And by the way, somebody did an analysis. If you took those out, just the red states, still top 10 most deaths or highest death rate anyway. And Jared Kushner initially stopping some of the purchases early on. Like whole book could just be written about Jared Kushner and how he helped to make the pandemic as horrible as it could possibly be.
Colorado, like trying to fix the problem with the ventilators and actually reducing the number of ventilators and giving some profit to a private company over it. Because they meddle, because they can't help themselves. They mess up. They are the team that couldn't shoot straight.
Yeah. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, so I'll be going first. My garbage person of the week this week is the garbage person for, I believe, the first time in TDR history. And it is Joe Rogan. Why? Well, if you follow the news, I think you already know why. But let me feed the beast here. It gets hungry in its head. Okay, so why? What's that?
You put the eyeballs on the top or turn it upside down and shove the garbage person up in its mouth.
That's a good point. It's getting dangerous there. Anyway, why would he be the garbage person? Well, it has to do with a bit of audio from his incredibly popular podcast. Listen to Joe Rogan here.
Joy going there. I actually love Portland. It's one of my favorite places to perform. Most of the people there are very nice, but there's a madness going on there. You want to talk about madness of crowds? That exemplifies that right now. And it's to me, they've arrested people for lighting forest fires up there. They've arrested left-wing people for lighting these forest fires, you know, air quote activists. And this is something that's also not widely being reported, you know, that people have actually been arrested for lighting fires up there.
Okay, so I'm going to focus on that last part. So he points out that it's not widely reported. Turns out there is a reason for that. It's that it's not true. It's not only not true, but it has been debunked. And it had been debunked days before he did that. Widely debunked, widely shared, easily accessible fact checking on that claim that had been opportunistically and partisanly spread by right wing media sources like Breitbart. I mean, a lot of people saw these tweets from FBI Portland that said that reports that extremists are setting wildfires in Oregon are untrue. Help us stop the spread of misinformation by only sharing information from trusted official sources. They go on to say conspiracy theories and misinformation take valuable resources away from local fire and police agencies working around the clock to bring these fires under control. Please help our entire community by only sharing validated information from official sources. So yes, when they have to chase down these conspiracy theories, that damages their ability to save lives, save property, and all of that. Both Reuters and factcheck.org have conducted further investigation, finding no evidence to back the claims, with the former noting that local Oregon police departments have been working to quote debunk misinformation spreading on social media platforms regarding the fake claims of forest fires. And how bad has it become? It's become this bad. Over the past weekend, Facebook began cracking down on the spread of this conspiracy theory days before Rogan's podcast. It's so bad that it's a conspiracy theory that even Facebook is fighting against.
It's not a conspiracy theory. It is a lie. Conspiracy okay, theory sure. is like a lot of people got together to come up with this lie and perpetuate it. No. This is just a lie. This is the no one's deep inside the government making this happen. This is a bunch of liars lying. That's it. Don't even give it the credit to be a conspiracy theory. Theory is a word in science that like you have that's it's more than a hypothesis. This is just a freaking lie. And
do you
want to talk about Joe? Yeah, what do you want to do?
Yeah, and it's a lie with a point because it wasn't just, oh, I think that's what the fires came from when it's not, which I guess you could just be wrong. I would argue the reason that he ends up in here is because we have decided as a society, indeed as a world, that he should be the biggest purveyor of news for our species. And so that's what he is. And so he has a massive platform and thus, in the style of Marvel, with great power comes great responsibility. You need to know what you're talking about, especially when millions of people will go away from listening to that podcast. That podcast that is 100, maybe 1,000 times bigger than this podcast. And will say, oh, that's what it is. I don't have to worry about these fires. I certainly don't have to worry about climate change because it's not climate change. It's left wing air quotes activists, because he doesn't even believe that those protesters in the Portland area are actual activists, apparently. He's spreading misinformation that is consequential in a number of different ways to manipulate people into believing political things that are not accurate. Okay, that is the definition of garbage when it comes to media.
Yeah, and let's connect it with another thing in the news. Joe Rogan saying, I'd like to moderate a debate with the presidential candidates.
Yeah.
And yeah. A lot of people saying, this is a great idea, this is an awesome idea. It's so exhausting. Like, I like Joe Rogan. Like, I like his comedy. I like that he made people eat bugs. Like, I like that he is definitely.
That was a good show.
I like that he's smarter than Dave Rubin. I love that when he's like.
He's 100 times smarter than Dave Rubin.
That's the thing, is just because he's smarter than Dave Rubin, so's the puppies you're about to see. Because you passed the threshold. Like those puppies are smarter than Dave Rubin. Their minds are not reeling from such high level ideas in recovery mode. Like, but the problem, here's the problem with Joe Rogan, is that the asset of Joe Rogan is that he will listen and he'll have a conversation. But unfortunately, he doesn't have that instinct to then like do the research or retain anything else. He thinks he can do it all on the spot. When if he just did a little bit more research, and then also like if we kept it in the context of him moderating a debate, it is very certain that Donald Trump being there would make him feel so jazzed and so awesome that we are positively reinforcing the behavior that led him to spread a debunked BS thing, a lie. Yeah. We're saying, here you go, just because you're an everyman. Who sits there and asks questions, that is not the job of a moderator. The job of the moderator is to not let them get away with stuff if they're lying, or at least identify what to press them on. Because while he is equipped to combat things that sound like BS to him, he is not equipped to detect all the BS that's happening.
You're 100% right. Yeah, he is perhaps uniquely not qualified to do it, because his draw, why people like him, is he lets people come on and say things. But that's not what a debate is supposed to be about. Now, finally, on this, is he lying? I don't know. I doubt it. No. He seems much more like the sort of guy that just gets things wrong because he believes the wrong people. That seems to be a sort of constant thread, is that he tries to engage with these things. He's open-minded and all of that. But unfortunately, he exposes himself to people who are wrong or manipulative or, you know, BS. So that seems more likely. The issue is, as I alluded to earlier, you're the biggest one ever anywhere. So you cannot be routinely wrong about things that are incredibly consequential, let alone all the other potential problems. In this area, it's too important to get it wrong. And I doubt a retraction or an apology will come. I hope that it will, because millions of people will hear that too. But it's certainly needed.
Yeah, there was another thing he did in the news recently where he was like, he talks about dead naming, and he's like, and some people are like, he's just pointing out how bad cancel culture is. Yes, it's fine. Cancel culture needs like three different titles for all the ways it's used. Like, there's cancel culture when someone else does it. There's cancel culture when you're defending what you think should be negative consequences for everybody. And then there's cancel culture that someone is like trying to give you a reason for dismissing an entire discussion. Those are three different things, and everyone calls it cancel culture. It's so very frustrating. They all
get slumped together.
But like, this comes down to it. Like, if he thinks that this thing of left wing activists setting this lie that left wing activists set a fire in Portland is so cool that he wants to put all his energy into discussing that and him being cool because he's on the inside of it. But he needs to spend a little bit of effort researching to see if it's true. And he doesn't do that. The same way when it comes to like dead naming, he wants to spend so much effort finding some philosophical way for him to get a get out of jail free card for being a jerk, rather than spending like 2 seconds to figure out what the criticisms are of people who dead name trans folks. Like, that's it. Just figure it out. Cause I know he's decent at some point. He just doesn't, you know, he's still a performer. He's still a stand up, and all stand ups are neurotic balls of garbage. I mean, it's true. I mean,
you say that as a stand-up,
as someone who has done it before. Not like I don't do it, haven't done it much, but like, yes, like the comedic mind is the most like completely neurotic and messed up mind. Like, you have to find out like what's wrong with stuff and point out. But so he still has that, and he and that makes him want to defend himself rather than ever admit that he made a mistake. Yeah. But that's what's so frustrating. And it's just misplaced effort.
Yeah.
All right, my garbage person, I haven't done this in a very long time, but my garbage person is the president of the United States, Donald John Trump, where he does lies all the time and I don't like it and it's very frustrating. But I will say that there was one thing in particular that he did recently. This was a tweet from this morning where he said, Biden failed badly with the swine flu. It was the gang that couldn't shoot straight. He didn't have a clue. We have done an incredible job with the much tougher China virus. So let's just go through it. When it comes to swine flu, 12,000 deaths in America. And Trump has not done a good job. So that's a smaller number than 200,000. Just, I haven't done the math exactly to find out exactly how much it is, but I'm feeling 12,000 is less than 200,000 deaths.
It's at least half as few.
At least half as less few. Here's another tweet. Someone found it. Like, there's always a tweet. So last year, 37,000 Americans died from the common flu. This was on March 9th. It averages between 27,000 and 70,000 per year. Nothing is shut down. The life and the economy go on with flu. At this moment, there are 546 confirmed cases of coronavirus with 22 deaths. Think about that. Oh, I'm sure we thought about that at the time. At that time, March 9th was after the recording.
where he said all those, where he admitted he knows that it's deadly. Since then, here are the numbers: 6.7 million cases, 198,000 people dead in the United States, according to the New York Times. And then in terms of whether he's done well or not, I remind you what I showed you Friday on the show. Here is the failure gap of Donald Trump, which turned upside down. We showed that it was Trump's hair, but that failure gap is filled with corpses,
yeah.
American corpses, red-blooded, 1776, flag-waving, American voting corpses. And that's what he did. And in the meantime, when it came to approval of Biden and confidence in the way that the American government was handling swine flu, it had a 67% approval rating of how swine flu was held. And again, every death is a tragedy. That number is smaller than the average deaths from the flu. What is Donald Trump's track record? And in here, I put one fake one. And tell me if you can find what the fake one is. Here's Dr. Don's medical record. He was late on masks. Slow the testing down. Demon nocturnal impregnation doctor. That was the doctor who came out and was like, you get an incubus and a succubus if you have sex in your dreams. That's the medical advice. Hydroxychloroquine, the MyPillow guy's extract. Putting UV light in your veins. His current super spreader tour, where people are wearing no masks and signing away their lives. Listening to scientists and injecting yourself with disinfectant. Now, I originally had Dino DNA in there as the fake one, but I thought it would be more effective if the fake one was just listening to scientists, something that he doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
And his priority should be saving lives. It is not. And he thinks he can message. Here's his message that he thinks he can get away with. I'm a success. And Biden's a failure on illnesses. I'm a success and Biden's a failure on illnesses. While the scoreboard reads, Biden has 12,000 deaths and Trump has 200,000 deaths. And I'll get 198,000 deaths. That is like if you were in a football game and your score was, you scored 100 points, 70 points, you had 10 touchdowns. And the other team had 70 and you had 0. And you think you won the game.
Yeah.
Does he think 100%. The higher score wins here? He's a golfer. He should know the lower score should win in this case. But then again, he said that he shot in the low 70s at the course that holds the US Open, which would win you the US Open some of years.
So he's a liar. I mean, that's another thing that he's losing by being president. He could be winning the US Open.
Yeah, that's true.
You're 100% right. One other way to put it in perspective, these numbers between the swine flu and that, the number of people who died from the swine flu is very close to the number of Americans that will die between this episode of Garbage People and when Biden and Trump debate at the end of this month. We'll have about one swine flu worth of COVID deaths. If we're lucky and if the numbers don't shoot up again, it'll be about that much. Yeah, you're 100% right.
The numbers are shooting up again.
The number of cases have started to go up. He had that big press conference with his little chart where he patted himself on the back for the number of people who would have died if we'd done the herd mentality thing, even though he's now doing that thing. He wants to make the election once again about the pandemic, I guess. He seems to be trying to do that. Okay, let's talk about it. Brett, you've done a great job with this. We're gonna start rolling through some of the past comments starting on Monday. Let's have that conversation. Let's see where the facts lay. And so those are our garbage people. What about the community? So we had it up on the community tab on TDR and Dragon Squad 10,000 strong voted on this. And so a fairly runaway winner with 58% of the vote, the ICE doctor collecting uteruses from that absolutely horrid story about the ICE detention facility.
Yeah.
Bill Barr for corrupting the DOJ coming in with a strong, well-deserved second. Anti-maskers in Utah, it is at 8%. Michael Caputo for interfering with CDC reports on COVID at 5%. And Candace Owens at 4%. I didn't actually know that story. I didn't know.
Oh, really?
So it's LeBron James one.
You didn't know that? You didn't cover? Do you want to, like, the story is,
what is it?
LeBron James said that Ahmaud Arbery was hunted and that's not okay. And because those sheriffs were shot outside a train station in Compton, Candace Owens is blaming LeBron James for that.
That's insane.
And wants LeBron. And so
In addition to that, the LA sheriff, Alex Villanueva, has asked LeBron James, just to give you an idea of who the garbage sheriff of Los Angeles County is in cahoots with and in line with. It's Candace Owens. He asked LeBron James to double the reward for finding the person who shot it, who shot them. Just to let you know, the budget for Los Angeles police misconduct in the sheriff's budget for LA police for police misconduct claims and settlements is $148 million. So are you out of that money? Are you, do you need LeBron James to come in? Or Alex, why don't you double those settlements, bud? Because you're like LeBron James just said, like, we shouldn't be like pointed out a very real problem backed up by statistics. And he is obviously against what happened to those police, to those sheriff's deputies outside the Compton train station. Obviously against, everybody is obviously against that. I hate to break their brains, but it's possible to be for police reform and against just walking up and shooting people. Yeah. But they're gonna go after LeBron James for that. And that is psychotic.
She deserves that 4%, and that's it. I'd like to go back to never hearing from her again. Yeah. So we have a quick update. Look, this is the way of garbage people. When we throw someone in the trash, it causes an effect in the world. So as of 2 minutes ago, Joe Rogan, who I have to assume was watching the show, tweeted, I effed up on the podcast with Douglas Murray and said that people got arrested lighting fires in Portland. That turns out to not be true.
But well, like that,
we already knew it wasn't true beforehand, but that turns out to not be true. I was very irresponsible not looking into it before I repeated it. That's good that he said that. I read one story about a guy getting arrested for lighting fires, turned out to be true, but the other S I read about people getting arrested for lighting fires in Portland was not true. I repeated it without looking into it, and it was a really effing stupid mistake that won't happen again. I'm sorry. I would just critique that one story that he's talking about was about a person who was not affiliated with those groups, who was lighting a tiny little fire in like the median, not causing a forest fire. So there's some good stuff in the apology. Hopefully he talks about it on the podcast as well.
Just so that, yeah, how many people it takes. But like if he hosted if he moderated a debate, Trump would have gotten away with it.
Yeah, a tweet the next day wouldn't have solved it. Yeah, 100%. So good that he apologized. Hopefully he does it on the actual platform that he, you know, told the misinformation on. That'll do to whatever extent that it can be reversed. Maybe some of that will happen. We'll see. I don't know. It caused a lot of news coverage of the story. Some of that might have trickled down to right wingers. We'll see. But anyway, yeah, these things are consequential. We got to get it right, whether you're, you know, small, medium, or the biggest source of news on the planet. Anyway, with that leaves us with only one thing to do before we're done for the week. Brett, what have you got for us? Because we're at
life. Put your face on and bring the pups.
Okay, we're at 3.5K. So if there's another half of an animal laying around, you can show that too.
Why? Just stay here for a second. She might be asleep. Okay. They might be.
I'm gonna look at some super chats while you get some pups. Franklin Sharpslicer sent us one saying, "Goody goody, it's garbage day. We get to throw a-holes away. Brett, try this like or not, just like kitty, make puppy box. Happy half hour coming up. Have fun, don't throw up." And well, I'm not gonna read that because someone could think I was swearing, but thank you, Franklin Sharpslicer. I appreciate the super chat there. That's a good one. Okay, the super nomad girl says, wait a second. I'm hoping that if I super chat, you will be kind enough to explain what the heck a tier one sub is. Guessing it's not an S&M thing. No, it's just a Twitch thing. Why have we not cut to Brett's video yet? A one shot, please. Oh, he's resting his head on you. His tongue.
Oh. We were sleeping. We
were What's his name?
This is cheesecake.
I love cheesecake more than life itself.
Say hi to John. Say hi to Johnny.
Cheesecake. And this is Who's
Pistachio.
That? Pistachio. Ooh, Pistachio's flailing.
Oh. Cheesy and stashy.
Cheesy little puppies. And stashy. Are they friends?
They're sister and brother.
They're such different colors, but they seem very friendly with each other.
Yep, they love each other. They sleep like this.
Well, you have to take a photo of them sleeping like that now.
Oh, we have many photos of them sleeping like that.
I just woke them from the deepest puppy sleep.
Oh my God, they're yawning. I'm glad that, I mean, you know, it sucks that they had to be woken up, but now they're yawning and that's adorable. Oh my God, they're finding things in his beard.
Put the headphone in my ear.
My God, congratulations everyone. Earning both pups and half of a wife. That's the extra 500 likes.
They like fighting, that's why. So this is the cute, stupid one, and this is the smart.
They're both cute. Still and they're cute. Both smart, but one of them is smarter.
Oh, I want to meet them. Can I meet them?
You can meet them. Okay, and they won't become dog meat because we got saved.
Oh, that was a close one, really. Thank you, everyone. Because if he had to throw that into the blender, that would have been we dodged a bullet there. Okay, legally as well. Okay, Brett, thank you. Where can people
here's how you can adopt them. Put the thing.
Adopt LA at bestfriends.org.
If you live in the LA area, ask for cheesecake and pistachio.
I could only adopt one, and I'm sure we don't want to split them up. So
he can only adopt one. What are those rules about?
I have two dogs already. I can't double the number of dogs. Yeah, anyway, everyone go to the website.
The math of these dogs is the same as one dog.
It's like one big dog. Okay, anyway, Brett, thank you. Everyone go watch him on the Happy Half Hour later on today. Moxie's on?
Yep, Moxie. Awesome. Moxie TV. Fun.
Awesome. Okay, Brett, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Every day, because Donald Trump is the president, we as Americans are forced to deal with him and the way he communicates with us. We have to process the biglies and the strongs and the randomly putting quotation marks around things and referring to himself as Trump and all of the little linguistic quirks about Donald Trump. We deal with it, but we don't necessarily have the expertise, the training, or the time to actually analyze it. But there are people who have. And they have produced the new book, Language in the Trump Era, Scandals and Emergencies. And we are very lucky to be joined by linguistics expert and editor of that book, Norma Mendoza Denton. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I just want to also give a shout out to my co-editor, Professor Janet McIntosh from Brandeis University.
Awesome. And you've collected so many different writers who have come together to produce this. So you're a linguistics expert. Tell me a little bit about how this project came about. What was the sort of mission of it?
I think for my part, I had already been thinking about language and masculinity, especially in terms of political campaigns and political thought in Mexico. So I'm originally from Mexico, and when the former president Vicente Fox came onto the scene in Mexico, he kind of shocked the public by doing a lot of swearing and a lot of posturing and calling his opponents names, and all of the opponents were also shocked and implied that, you know, this was no fitting behavior for a president. And so when it came time to the 2016 campaign, I saw the same thing kind of recurring with Donald Trump. And that's what got me interested in in all of the linguistic things that wound up going down. And he similarly shocked the public and commentators and his opponents, who just simply refused to believe that this type of personality could land in the presidential seat. And so he did. Right around the same time, Professor McIntosh, who's been working a lot with veterans and military speech in general, also had the same idea. We should put together this panel. We went to the American Anthropological Association, put together a blockbuster panel, and walked out with a book contract. So that's what happened. After that, it was just herding cats.
I can only imagine what that project must have been like. But so in the intro to this, I gave a few of the things that stand out to me about the way Trump speaks and all of that. You obviously come at it from, you know, an academic background. What are some of the ways that you would characterize Trump's use of language? What are some of the highlights that differentiate him from other, you know, other Americans, other politicians, other presidents?
Okay, well, one of the I'm going to refer to specific authors who have written within the volume about this. So one thing that really struck all of us was that when Trump appearingly seems incoherent it's not really entirely incoherent. So he might give, he might say, you know, for instance, if you just look at the work of, you know, if you look at Sidney Blumenthal, Sidney Blumenthal has been in the news all this time and everybody's going, who is that? Right? Why is this relevant? So then, you know, all of the media people jump up and look this up, right? And so this is, I think, the first president that we've had to have essentially exegesis of everything he says. There has to be like a side column explaining all of these obscure things he's referring to. Like, is this something he made up? Is this an actual word? Is this some kind of dog whistle or a veiled reference? So there's a kind of, there's a way in which he might seem incoherent at first glance. And Professor Slaughter has a chapter on the significance of his incoherence. Another thing that has really stood out to everybody was the idea of plausible deniability. So Adam Hodge just writes on this, and he says that essentially what you have is this idea that you're going to put forward a statement that in the end doesn't hold water or can be denied in some way, right? So let's take, for instance, the coronavirus will disappear situation, right? He said it when it started. He still said it, I think, yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. Just you watch, it's all going to disappear. Well, yes, all things will disappear eventually, right? The entire earth will pulverize to dust. At some point, the coronavirus will disappear, and it will mutate into something else. And he will say, see, that was it. It went away on its own, only 200 mm-hmm. years later, right? So he's, you know, the way that he manipulates and skirts the deniability of what he's going to say always makes it so that, oh, it wasn't me who said that. It was you who thought that. Right? Mm-hmm. I didn't say that. I didn't say, you know, she was menstruating when I said blood coming out of her wherever. That's you. You have a dirty mind.
Yeah.
So there's
yeah, 100%.
In Spanish, we call this flipping the tortilla, right? He flips the tortilla and then suddenly it was you.
That's clever. I haven't heard that before. I like that. I don't know if this is directly related to that, the plausible deniability. But look, I find fascinating the gap between I'm just a person that has had to listen to way too much of him, and you are a person who comes at this from, you know, a sort of rigorous scientific level of analysis. And so there's a thing that he does that I would love to get your opinion for. To be a little bit crude there, I would term it as the way a dumb person speaks to hide their lack of knowledge. So he will, perhaps 25% of what he says is, like you've never believed, nobody's ever seen it, nobody could have imagined. You know, we've done things that people would have never predicted. He used these sorts of grandiose hyperbolic statements. To me, I read those as there's nothing specific said, no information is actually given. Again, there's a little bit of plausible deniability. I assume that his followers sort of fill that in. They fill in those gaps to make it seem like he's really saying something. Is that a tactic? What is he doing there?
I mean, that's called underspecification, if you want a kind of technical term. But the idea is that, okay, so one thing that I noticed, and you know, you guys have talked about it on your show, is that he sees himself as the primary cheerleader. And part of the, you know, being a cheerleader is, you know, to cheer the uncheerable, and you hide bad information. So in order to do that and to set yourself up as the pinnacle of knowledge, you know, capability and power, you're going to have to say that you're the best at everything. So everything winds up with a superlative. So it's like you've never believed. This is the best country in the world. We are the highest life form in the universe. I mean, it just going, right? And because there is no real counterfactual to that, like you can't, there's no counterfactual that can be offered to an absolute superlative like that. And so he winds up kind of getting away with it. So to some people, it will sound like he's just using filler words, this underspecified reference, like some people were on a plane, some people were wearing masks. So, I mean, all of this underspecification allows both things, right? It allows him to A, get out of it, and B, to claim that, you know, we have the best economy on the planet. We have the best response to COVID. I am the only thing standing between you and total chaos.
I want to make sure that we touch base with your chapter, because you're not only an editor, you also mm-hmm. are an author, wrote a chapter titled yeah. "We Latin Americans Know a Messianic Autocrat When We See One." What was the sort of focus of that chapter?
The focus of that chapter is trying to ferret out, you know, if you compare Trump to other people, you know, I started this conversation talking about Vicente Fox, but the person who is now president of Mexico, his name is Andrés Manuel López Obrador. We call him AMLO. So I compare Trump, AMLO, and Bolsonaro in Brazil and try to figure out, like, what are some of the common threads that we can pull if we look across this type of masculine dictator type of personality, right? And so it's important to me that when people take this information in, they see that we're trying to pull it apart no matter what the political persuasion. AMLO is a diehard leftist, mm-hmm. right? He has been campaigning for years in Mexico as a champion of the people and, you know, came from very humble origins. He's from the state of, you know, they call him Peje Lagarto, all of these things that allude to his humble roots. And Bolsonaro is not in that situation, but he definitely plays the populist angle. Mm-hmm. And so you can see that no matter what political spectrum they're on, they're essentially using a certain type of masculinity to portray themselves. They are picking a particular segment of the society to essentially be against, to serve as a foil in their political discourse. So Trump has picked out the squad, for instance, and AMLO has picked out a type of upper class Mexican group that we call fresas, strawberries, right? He's picked out the fresas and, you know, the people, I guess sometimes people also call them fifis, because their dogs presumably are named Fifi. And so there's a kind of implied tension, you know, between the man of the people and these upper class people who don't want like real kind of earthy power. And for Bolsonaro is just the total, you know, Trump 2.0 or 3.0 by this time, where he's, you know, he goes where Trump has gone and even further in Brazil. And it's really devastated the economy. It's devastated their coronavirus response, and it's devastated LGBTQ people, as well as environmental groups and the entire Amazon. So
yeah. You know, I love that you're doing these comparisons with the current leaders, again, as you said, from, you know, across the political spectrum. One other thing I'm curious about is, so what I would love to know, and I know that this is going to get into the area of speculation, is this a work you've put together that we'll look back on someday as an awesome analysis of this weird standout of political language? Or is this the first in a series of books that will analyze how this becomes more the sort of standard, the go-to? And so basically what I'm asking is, are you seeing evidence out there that this is having an effect on how other politicians speak? Is this spreading, maybe in the Republican Party, maybe outside of the Republican Party?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in some ways, you know, I used to live in Tucson, Arizona, and I always thought of it as a canary in the coal mine, because the things that we would see in public discourse in Tucson would suddenly, you know, take the next step up and be what we could see nationally. And I see something very similar with the way that political speech is going, is that now you have the president talking about sort of shadowy groups and setting up other people to be taking essentially the blame for things that he has planted himself. So in that, in that sense, you know, you can see this kind of thing. You know, we've seen it before in terms of propaganda and fascism, but we can see this sort of continuing to happen in other places around the world. So that, for instance, Erdogan has been doing this as well, right? So there's a whole kind of international way in which Trump's discourse patterns license other people to do the same thing, whether it be domestically or internationally. And unfortunately, the genie is out of the bottle, right? Even if whichever way the election goes, there's no way to put back this kind of discourse, right? I don't know if you recall when Gabby Giffords was shot and Sarah Palin put up essentially a target on, just before she was shot, she had put up a target on the various names of the different opponents. After that, you could really feel a sea change of people thinking, oh my goodness, this is serious. Like, we have to take people seriously who are going to come in and shoot up town hall meetings. And I remember talking to, I had been doing political analysis of Arizona town hall meetings at that time. And I remember thinking, this is a big change. Before that, nobody had training in how to deal with disruptive town hall meetings. And now all the staffers know how to do that. All the staffers would know how to contain a threat. So, so it's a change.
Okay. I hope in this area you're wrong. I hope the genie can be put back in the bottle, because I'm sick of it and I want it to end. I want Twitter to be a little bit less awful, and he has made it pretty bad. But I do agree, super serious. People need to pay attention to it. And I think a great way for people to do that is by taking a look at the book, Language in the Trump Era, Scandals and Emergencies. Norma Mendoza Denton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.